Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, November 15th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it. Why? Because, man, it'll make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what's inside of your heart, and we'll discuss it. And then we'll have a good time. You can like the show on Facebook. Did you like how I stuttered that? You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. So right now, it's about 4:20 p.m. I'm watching Red Zone. Red Zone's on mute. And I can gladly report that Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers have won. They beat the Titans. I think Jameis Winston beat the – I think they won. What else? Let me go to my – I'm trying to go to my NFL. I didn't know that I was going to be doing this. I'm going to my NFL mobile app. Yes, 27-10. The Carolina Panthers won. Where's the Buccaneers? The Buccaneers beat the Cowboys 10-6. So, you know, we got Tyrod Taylor. They beat the Jets. Hashtag black quarterbacks. So now Teddy Bridgewater just went up 7-0 on Oakland. So we doing it right now, young. We doing it, young. Hashtag black quarterbacks. I got that on mute. And I'm going to give you guys a podcast. I'm just going to talk into this microphone. It's just me. This is episode 144. And we're just going to fly solo with this one. And we're going to have a good time. I'm going to entertain you, try to at least. I'm putting myself out there as a budding artist that I'm going to do my work hard and try to make you laugh or just make you have a good time. Man, let you pass the time with my dulcet tones as you get through your workout, your TPS reports in your cubicle with your nice coffee from Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, whatever you prefer. You know, I'm not gonna judge you here. I'm not gonna judge your coffee choices, your bagel choices, your donut choices, your cereal. We're not gonna do that here. You know, I'm not gonna do that. So I wouldn't want you to judge anybody else either. Maybe you're doing laundry and you're listening to this. You know, maybe you're doing that. Maybe you got me in your headphones. And there's a crying baby somewhere near you at the laundromat. And you don't want to hear that kid. It's not your kid. Why is somebody going to bring their kid and have that kid scream, you know, while you're trying to wash your unmentionables? Right? You know, can you say, is that what you say? Your underwear, your drawers? You know, we're not going to do that. All right. So, episode 144, there's some stuff I want to talk about. Yesterday I went on an excursion with two lovely ladies, Sue Funk and Chelsea White, the host of the Cabernet in A podcast. And, we did a Sheetz Wawa challenge. And the way that this came up was the fact that I was on one of the initial episodes of Cabernet and A. It's the definitive Pretty Little Liars podcast, I would say. And if any of you are fans of that show, listen to it. It's good. It's very informative. They go in depth. These ladies know a lot of shit. And I'm just like, I'm a fan of the show. I watch the show, but I'll just live tweet stuff as it happens. But they just go in depth. They're like, in this episode, Arya was wearing this sweater, which meant that she was evil, or, you know, just some crazy shit that goes on. And they're great. So when I was on there, one of the first times I was on there, it somehow came up that I thought that Sheets was slipping. And I would say this, that I felt like they were a little bit. Because Sheets, I did an episode where I discussed this. I don't remember which episode it was, but I talked about the Sheets Wawa debate, and that's something that comes up on Black Twitter. But I think Black Twitter, most of the people on Black Twitter, and like Fonte, the great Fonte said, Black Twitter is Twitter. So I really kind of should stop saying Black Twitter. But on Twitter, most people, and it seems like a lot of the people that I follow, I guess it just sort of happened this way. They're from like South Jersey, Delaware, Philly area. And all they know, for the most part, is Wawa. So they're going to always talk about Wawa as being superior. Me, I would say that I didn't grow up around that. I didn't really know about Sheets or Wawa until college. I know a lot of my friends that went to Mount St. Mary's College, now University, in Emmitsburg, Maryland. A lot of my classmates were from Jersey, PA, all over that region, the Northeast region. And there was a Sheets in Thurmont, Maryland, which was about 7 miles away. And Sheets was the shit. Like, when you didn't want cafeteria food, you didn't want to eat on campus, you would just go to Sheets and it would be the shit. People would get mad at you if you went and didn't tell anybody. And so you'd have friends mad at you if you didn't tell them you were going and didn't get them anything. So I would say that place holds the same sentimental value as an Outback Steakhouse, like going there with my parents and stuff that I talk about all the time, or Fuddruckers, going with my dad and sometimes my mom too. But mainly, I think it was like a father son thing. My mom, it was different. It was sort of Wendy's makes me think about my mom. Like when it comes to like hanging out with my mom, I used to drive her. We used to go to Tyson's Corner Mall. This is very inside DC metro area talk right now. But we used to go to Tyson's Corner, walk around the mall, hang out. I would sit and my mom would try on shoes and stuff. Then she liked to go to this fabric store because my mom's a seamstress, called G Street Fabrics. And it was in, I think it was like the Bailey's Crossroads, some mall, but it was G Street Fabrics. And she would go in there and I would go to Barnes and Noble, walk around, look at books and stuff. And then we'd meet at the car. I'd meet her and then we'd go to Wendy's and then we'd sit down there and eat. And that just made me think of that. That was our thing. So that was more of a, even though Wendy's is more, it's a fast food spot, but that was just the spot that we would go to because it was in that shopping center. I think one time we went to Chili's or someplace in there. It was all right. Or I think they had like a Uno's there. Anyway, so that makes me think fondly of my mom. I think we brought that up once. I was talking to her about that like sometimes a couple weeks ago. Anyway, so we did this challenge. So Chelsea said, you know, Chris, if you drive, I'll fund it. We'll do gas. She bought the gas. She got me gas. She bought the sandwiches. And so they did this special Sheets Wawa Challenge Edition. I don't know when it's coming out, but we went to Wawa. And so basically I was telling her I felt like Sheets was falling off because the last time I went, it was in Durham right after I talked to Fonte for episode 100. Listen to that. Really great episode with me talking to Fonte. I would say I'm going to get on my high horse and say that that was one of the definitive Fonte interviews that you can listen to in podcast form. I don't think you've ever heard him mention him being a gamer and us vibing off of The Last of Us. So I don't think any of you nerds out there knew that Fonte was an undercover gamer. Anyway, so after I talked with him, I got some gas in like around his neighborhood, and there was a Sheetz maybe 20 minutes. I was like, oh, okay, I haven't been to Sheetz in a long time. And I ate there. It was just kind of like, it was just okay. And it wasn't the same anymore. And I kind of carried that with me into that podcast. And I was kind of just giving Chelsea a little shit, and she got hyped. And then someone tweeted her about a month or two ago, was like, oh, I listened to that Cabernet and A episode about Sheetz and Wawa. And Chelsea was like, oh, we got to do a challenge. I was like, well, you set it up. And we tried to set it up for last month. Some plans fell through, and we did it yesterday. And it was a great time. It was just a good time talking to them. They're great, great ladies. And we just had a good time kind of talking shit and talking a little bit of comedy. And then we talked, you know, we obviously ate. I didn't eat like an asshole too much, but I will say the next time I got a gig in March headlining a show at the Arts Quest Ale House in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. That's in March. But I think when I go the next time I'm there, the after party for me will be at Sheetz out there. I'll definitely have to make a stop there, because we tried a bunch of different things. And we tried like the hoagie, like just like a cold cut sandwich from both Sheetz and Wawa. You really couldn't tell much of a difference, except for the sandwich, the bread at Sheetz was toasted, but the bread at, I don't think you could get the hoagie toasted at Wawa. So, but they were both really good, and they had sliders. I've had burgers from Sheetz before, but damn, those sliders were on point. So it was fucking great. I had a good time. And I had a sandwich for dinner, and that did taste like, I texted Chelsea. I had that for dinner like hours later, and it tasted like it used to taste. And I had to nuke it a little bit in the microwave, but that shit was good. So that Sheetz in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania was fire. So I had a good time, and I just kind of chilled and watched movies. I'll get into that a little bit. I'll give you how many movie reviews? I'll just give you, I think I just got one for you right now that I can think of. Maybe some TV stuff too. And I was thinking, speaking of food, I did something different with my spaghetti. I don't think I've talked about the way that I make spaghetti. I'm pretty amazing at making spaghetti. The sauce, or the gravy, as some people say in this New York, New Jersey, Connecticut region, some Italian folks will say. I realized, and I didn't know that I was going to make it that day, but last Monday, about a week ago, yeah, it was Monday, I noticed in my cupboard that I had some ingredients to make spaghetti. I had crushed tomatoes, I had some sauce, and all I needed was tomato paste and a couple other ingredients to make spaghetti sauce. Now, the last time I made it, I just happened to be, I was like, oh, I should make some spaghetti. This might have been like a month or two ago. And I was in the grocery store. I said, oh, I think I'll make some spaghetti. Then I was like, oh, let me just try to make something quick. I'll just get a spaghetti sauce that I don't normally get. I said, let's try a really good spaghetti sauce. And I looked it up on my phone. Best spaghetti sauce, they would say. They said it was Raos, R-A-O-S. And I got some of this sauce, and it was like $9 for 24 ounces. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's expensive as fuck. Like, normally, when I was a kid, before my mom shifted from making it from scratch, she went to Ragu. Like, after, when she shifted from like this, making it from scratch to like just getting the sauce out of the bottle, she went to ragu, and that was really good because she would add the seasonings to it. She would add vegetables to it. It would be great. It's great. And I was like, let me do that. Let me do a little TBT. Let me do a little hashtag TBT on a Monday. And I was like, okay, I don't really feel like making any meatballs. I'll just get some of these meatballs from the deli. And they had these, I forget what they're called. You really probably don't really use them. You should make your own, really. So I got them. I spent like $12 on two packs or something. I think you get like, I forget how many you get. Maybe 12 a piece. They're relatively small. 12 in a box, in a package or whatever. And I get these. I make it. I taste it. It's just kind of like, it's not my best work. And it was kind of mediocre. And I don't know how much my fault it was, but I was disappointed. So I had to, like, it, and spaghetti sauce always tastes better the next day. And so I added a little seasoning to it, some little garlic, a little couple things to it. And it eventually tasted better, but I was still overall, I was disappointed about that experience. And I happened to be in Whole Foods, I think maybe a couple over that last sometime last week. And I was just getting some hamburger meat. I like to get, when I make hamburgers at home, when I'm not making my own patties, I like to get the meat from the burger patties, get like two patties from Whole Foods, and it's great. It's fucking great. Some of the best meat that I had. And I saw that they had meatballs, that they have them in at the meat counter, and then they have some that are packaged that they made in the butcher shop, and they sell them. There's about maybe like 8 to 10 of them for like $10. And I remember that, guys. I made a mental note and I said, I'm going to make some spaghetti, but I'm going to go to Whole Foods. I'm going to make the spaghetti like I used to make it. This guy at work gave me this great recipe to essentially make it from scratch. I said, okay, I'm going to do that, but I'm buying these meatballs from Whole Foods. I'm going to try it. And I did it, kind of expensive. It was like $20 because I maybe bought like eight. I think like eight came in that package and it was like 10 something. And then I got another pound, which was like six more. So that was like $17-18. And I was like, damn. And I got to stop thinking like this, where it's like, it's not just one meal. It's like six meals. It's like more, it's a lot of different, it's a lot of meals. So when you spend that money, you're actually paying for, you know, you're paying for more than one meal. So you the meatballs are huge. So really, you're only eating like maybe two meatballs, and I'm a big fucking guy. Two meatballs, it was enough for me. It was filling. It was good, and I really enjoyed it. So I did it that way, and I think I may continue to do that. Like, it was good. I enjoyed that, and I think my next step. I think I was thinking about this earlier for New Year's Eve. I'm just gonna have a nice night by myself. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, I'm gonna make lasagna because I'm kind of afraid. I'm not afraid to make lasagna, but it's something that's kind of, it's almost, is it an albatross on my shoulders? I wouldn't say that's something that's wearing me down. Student loans are wearing me down. Lasagna could never do that to me. Lasagna would never do that. Navient is my hotline bling, but lasagna would never do that to me. Oh shit, the Packers lost to the Lions. They missed a field goal. Wow. Okay, so yeah, so I'm going to try to do that. I think I'm going to put it on myself to make lasagna, cuz I'm just kind of apprehensive about it, so I got to face my fears and make it and see how it turns out. So I've been watching YouTube videos to see, and I've made a couple. I think I made like nacho supreme dip, like with like the beef and the like tomatoes and cheese and stuff. I made that. That turned out good. I made meatloaf. And there's just other things that I want to do to just expand the stuff, expand my the quality, expand my rep, expand. Add some notches under my cooking belt. Add some. add some more dishes into my repertoire, if you will. So I think that's what I'm going to do New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. While everybody else is out in the streets getting wasted and not being careful, and I'm just going to be at home. I'm going to go to Redbox and I'm going to one time, one New Year's, like maybe 2 years ago, I went to the movie theater, watched a couple movies. I got off work New Year's Eve, got a half day, watched movies. That was pretty fun. Oh shit. Yeah. So the Giants Patriots are playing, so that's going to be good, I guess. It's going to be a nail biter. Patriots look like they're about to score. So yeah, I'm going to do that. That's been Cooking Corner with Chris Lamberth. Cooking Corner. I'm coming for you, Felder. Not really. I'm not going to take Michael Felder of the Bleacher Report, one of the best. I would say if you're not following in the Bleachers, his Instagram, the food that guy makes is insane. What I got to do is find a reason to get down to Charlotte, see Rod and Karen of the Black Guy Who Tips, and have some of Michael Felder's food. That guy, the stuff that the guy makes just looks amazing. So yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Okay. So what are we, 21 minutes in? 20 minutes in. Let's see. What else do I want to talk to you guys about? I want to talk about something that's come up a lot on this show, especially when I talk to my fellow colleagues in the industry and in the biz, other comedians, like diversity. It comes up especially when I'm talking to my friends who are minorities. A lot of my friends are just like, really? And I am too, but I guess I've kind of pushed it to the side. They're really, they have their frustrations about minorities not being represented on TV, people that look like them. And it's become something that's, it's been a shift, because when I was a kid, I remember watching the Cosby Show, A Different World, you know, What's Happening, Martin, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, a lot of different shows with the Different Strokes. Those were a part of my childhood, and seeing black faces on TV. And it's obviously Spike Lee, who just got awarded his honorary Oscar for his achievements in film. And he was one of those dudes. Spike Lee was the guy. Like, if you see me do stand up, and you know I have that a Spike Lee story that I have to record. I have to record that when I do an album in the next couple years or so. And that'll be. I actually told that story recently at Astoria Coffee. A week or two ago, and yeah, he's one of my inspirations. He's one of the reasons why I'm talking to you in this microphone device. One of the inspirations, him and Denzel Washington, Samuel L. Jackson, and Wesley Snipes said some words, you know, about Spike before he received his award, and it was really cool, and it was just like, it just brought me back to my childhood. One of the things he said, you know. He said it's easier to be the president of the United States than to be the head of a movie house, the president of a movie studio. And he said the film industry, entertainment, is behind sports when it comes to diversity, and it's been that way for years. He said, you know, and this has been more popular with the advent of Scandal, while Papa Pope, the Joe Morton character, tells Kerry Washington. I always say the people, black, is that a black thing? Is it a black thing where we don't say, for the most part, we don't say the character's name? We say the the actor's real name, because I can't think of her. Her last name is obviously Pope. What the fuck is her name on that show? Jesus Christ. I don't watch the show. Carrie. Just, oh, my God. Because you always they always say, oh, you need such and such Pope. I'm doing the Wikipedia thing. That is so bad that I don't know that. Olivia Pope. Olivia Pope. Like, he tells Olivia, you know, you got to be better, 10 times better than your white counterparts in order to be successful or get half of what they get. And it's true. And Spike Lee said it in the speech last night. And it's on YouTube. It's on my Facebook feed. It's on Twitter. I posted it. Shadow and Act, which is under the umbrella of IndieWire, posted that. And it's it's like 12 minutes of Wesley Snipes, Denzel, and Samuel L. Jackson as they introduce Spike Lee and they say some words, and it's great, and it's all because those are the dudes that made me say, oh, I want to do that. That's cool. I want to do that stuff because those guys look cool, and they're doing it. And that was those dudes inspired me. And then August Wilson, you heard me talk about August Wilson a bunch of times on the show. And I think that's important. And I really don't think we kind of have it. We kind of have it a little bit. Like you're seeing John Boyega in Star Wars. And I'm that's got me over the moon with like just filled with excitement to see this fucking thing. You know, you got Michael B. Jordan doing his thing. So these guys, like, you got young black actors doing their thing. But for other minorities, it just seems like it's gotten worse. And you don't see that many. Like, we got Blackish and Empire and Fresh Off the Boat. There's more now than we've had in quite some time. But it's still a big problem. And Aziz Ansari just came out with a show on Netflix called Master of None, which is I think it's a terrific show. It's fun. And it's just like with some of the blurbs and the critics are saying, it's just kind of like maybe like it's effortless. It's effortless in the way that it presents diversity. Obviously, Aziz is Indian. He's got an Asian best friend in the show. He's got a lesbian black woman in the show. A Jewish guy, and he's dating white girls, props. And he's like, he's doing his thing. He's got his real life parents that are in the show. And they talk about issues of, like, you know, being Indian and trying to break into show business. They got about family, parents, and dating, and just all of that. And it's just, It's terrific. It's a 30-minute show and it's 10 episodes. Easy, very easy to binge watch. And he's been making the run. He's been doing the press run, promoting the show, writing articles, being interviewed, writing articles, doing the Reddit AMAs, which I want to look at. And wrote an essay for the New York Times and saying some really profound and interesting stuff. I think this is the best thing Aziz has done in his career. I think his stand-up's funny. It's serviceable. I mean, there was time when he was first starting to blow up, like with that Parks and Recs stuff. He would come in and do stand-up at a bar on the Lower East Side. One time he had me fucking crying. It was like some joke about, I think it was before his special came out. It was some joke that he had. And he didn't do it on the special. He had a joke about Metal Gear Solid. It was really it was like on some nerd shit. This is probably why I never got any special, but man, that shit was funny. He had me crying. And like his stand up is like, he's fine. Like, I like him. I think I like him. I enjoy Aziz as a personality, funny. And so he's doing the press junket and he's on Late Night with Colbert. And I posted a clip on Facebook about him, like, just kind of taking shots. Oh, there we go, Giants. There we go, Odell. I hope they beat the Patriots, man. And then I just want to see what the conversation is if the Giants beat the Patriots and the Patriots are like, what, 8-1, but the Panthers are 9-1. Who they're going to say should be the MVP? Probably still going to be Tom Brady. But All right, so he's doing the junket, and he's doing Colbert, and he just kind of takes shots subversively in a funny way, and it makes Stephen Colbert like laugh. Stephen Colbert agreed with him. They shook hands. It was funny, and then they went on with the interview. And then some people did not like that. But what I think what they didn't like, and this is something that the internet does very well, they'll say something like, Aziz Ansari shuts down Stephen Colbert on the late night show when it comes to diversity on CBS. A lot of people don't like that shit. And they mentioned that on my Facebook feed in the comments. And I just said something like, you know, he's speaking to something that's an undeniable truth. And if you have a problem with that, you might be a part of the problem because you're not trying to hear what this person who's different from you has to say. And that's all I said. And there was one person who I thought was a friend got mad and said I was being ridiculous or I was causing trouble, then messaged me on Facebook privately and was saying some things that were kind of mean or just kind of uncalled for, and just to make themselves be the victim where I felt like it didn't really need to be. And I'm not one for arguing on social media. I'll playfully argue about some, if you take shots at, like, I don't know, like if we're talking about a movie or something, it's nothing super serious. I save that shit for the stage. On social media, usually like, hey, come see me at this show. Oh, this band is cool. Check out this clip. Oh, did you see that dunk that LeBron James made? Did you see what Westbrook did? Oh my God. Did you see what Steph Curry did? Look at this retweet. You know, look at this article. It's good read. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to do that. Like, I'm going to say, oh, look what Cam Newton did. Hashtag black quarterbacks. That's me on social media. I take most of the time, I take my cues from a lot of the comics that I respect and revere. Some are famous. Some aren't. But how I save a lot of that shit for the stage, man. I mean, that's just how I roll. But you do what you do. I do what I do. You know what I'm saying? But people got mad about that. And I think this is interesting because it just seems to me, that ever since, look, I was at Hooters and I was a bastion of, a place where, great dialogue is had, great conversations are had. I was at the bar waiting on my takeout. I was talking to this guy who was black. He's about early 40s. He was telling me, he's like, man, it just seems like ever since Obama got elected, it's just been even worse these past 6-7 years. You know, they're killing us and blah, 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 and they doing this and they doing that. And I was just like, yo, like, I mean, hey, you kind of got a point. And he was telling me stuff like, I don't know if I mentioned black quarterback. I think I did. I mentioned black quarterback. It was probably me to mention black quarterback. And he told me this great story about Doug Williams. When Doug Williams won the Super Bowl and he was at an undergrad at UMass, and how people were upset with Doug Williams winning, and because he didn't do well at the beginning of the game. And then the guy was like being kind of racist towards him, and Doug Williams ended up obviously winning the Super Bowl. And it was just interesting how, you know, people still have those ideas and attitude. You got some unarmed black kid got killed today, or yesterday in Minnesota somewhere, I want to say. I don't know the full details on it, but probably some bullshit. And that stuff is still happening. And you got Missouri, the stuff that's happening there. And you got it's people. Somebody said this on Twitter, and I don't remember who said it, but someone said that, you know, as minorities I'm paraphrasing, but minorities have always had a voice. We just were unheard. And now you got to listen. Now with the power of social media, which is a tool that can be used to do great things. And it's been good for me. It's been great for a lot of my friends and people that I follow and so forth. But now people have to listen like that, or they have to, you know, it's in their face, and the inequities are undeniable, and you can't really run away from it. And I think that makes people upset. But if you don't like what someone posts on their feed, you don't have to follow them. You don't have to listen to or read what they say. And that thread was pretty interesting because, you know, a couple of people that I'm friends with, they were offended by what this person said to me, you know. And yeah, it's just funny how like a show with the Indian guy trying to get a girl and trying to have a career is a problem, and the creator of the show goes on a TV show to promote the show. I think it's his fucking job. It's Aziz's job. It's his I think it's his duty as a minority to make those statements like that, because there's going to be an Indian kid somewhere in the Midwest or somewhere down south, and how hard that is for somebody to be look like that and be from an area like that. There's going to be somebody that looks at what Aziz is doing, and that's going to inspire them, and that might inspire that person to be, it doesn't have, they're maybe not going to be a comedian, but maybe they're going to want to be a producer. Maybe they're going to want to be involved in show business or want to do something else that allows them to be great and really be a contributor to this country, really be a part of it. Because those stories, and it's like Sam Jackson said on Spike Lee's at Spike's ceremony, those people, Spike Lee inspired all types of people from different races and cultures to want to be filmmakers. We need those people in these professional fields we need them to be seen, and we need them to be, I don't know. To inspire. I mean, God, I mean, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I saw somebody else that looked like me do it. And we have to, when you get to that point, you have to bring other people up, man. Why else do it? Why do it? You know? And it makes me think about, what did it make me think about? It's making me think about something else. I may have lost it. Maybe I'll get it back. But yeah, that was pretty eye opening that person got really turned up about that. And I was like, it's an old phrase, hit dogs holler. And another comic said it, wrote it. I didn't write it, but another comic wrote it, and hit dogs are going to bark. And you know, what was it? Was it something that, you know, one of my friends, I have to have her back on, but one, she was saying that, you know, a lot of people were upset about, maybe people were upset about what Aziz said because he rope-a-doped him. Like, he was this affable Indian guy. He wasn't causing any trouble. He's likable, you know, small guy, funny, witty. And he's, you know, he's in this little box that they have for him. But when he said that shit on Colbert, like, that was some rope-a-dope shit. That was some shit like Muhammad Ali did. You know, and a lot of people got turned. Maybe people got turned off by that. But I think Aziz would. I'm not to speak for him, but it almost seems like, just looking at that, analyze it even further, he would be remiss if he didn't say that. You know, he probably didn't seize that moment, and that was a great moment to do that. Like, where else would he do that at? You know, I don't know. We still got a long way to go, man. I think people think just because we got Chipotle and Netflix and Spotify that everything's all right, but clearly it's not. If you really think about what's happened in Paris with ISIS and terrorism and all the violent shit that goes on in this world, let alone what goes on in this country, you know, people fighting over the wrong shit about if people coloring their Facebook picture with the France with Paris with the flag and people showing people showing pictures of them when they was in Paris, like, that ain't got shit to do. Ain't got shit to do with motherfuckers getting killed. But you was in Paris like a year ago. All right, when you know, but that, I think that's people just trying to show solidarity, and that's just me kind of being cynical. But you know, so it goes, man. What else? To TV. Let's go back. We can talk to more TV. There's a show. There's a miniseries on Starz called Flesh and Bone. That's pretty good. I'll read you the wiki blurb. After a long career as an acclaimed dancer, Paul Grayson founded the American Ballet Company, and he's determined to make it rank among the world's best artistic institutions. The key, he believes, is Claire Robbins, a transcendent ballerina capable of reaching the sublime, but her inner torment and aspirations drive her in compelling, unforeseeable ways, especially when confronted with Paul's ping-pong fits of ebullience and rage. ABC's mercurial leader requires his dancers abject devotion to an extremely unhealthy degree. Infused by New York's inherent drama, Flesh and Bone is a gritty, complex series that steadfastly explores the dysfunction and glamour of the ballet world. And it's created by Moira Wally Beckett, and she used to work on Breaking Bad, so that's what attracted me to this show initially. But first, I want to figure out what this word ebullience means. When I was a kid, whenever I didn't know what a word meant, I would ask my mom, and she would say, look it up, and I would look it up in the dictionary, and now you can Google it. Ebullience, the quality of being cheerful and full of energy. Exuberance. Okay. Ping pong fits of exuberance and okay, that makes sense. I understand it via the complex cues. So I'm trying to see what she actually did on Breaking Bad. It just says wiki says she just worked on there, but I know. She joined the crew of Breaking Bad as a story editor for the second season and wrote the episodes Breakage and Over. And she got nominated for a Writers Guild Award for their work. Were nominated, so they just got nominated. She wrote Gliding Over. Oh, yes, 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 yes. She wrote, okay. She was promoted again for producer for the fourth season in 2011. For the fifth season, Wally Beckett wrote Gliding Over All and Ozymandias. Ozymandias was like the best, and I'm getting chills as I say this shit. Ozymandias was the one of the best episodes and like of Breaking Bad. I would say that's gotta be top five. But it's okay, Ozymandias. The latter received universal praise from critics and has since been called one of the greatest episodes of television ever broadcast. See, there you go. On August 25th, 2014, she won the Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Writing for a Drama Series for Ozymandias, becoming the first solo woman to win the award in the drama category since Ann Bitterman won in 1994. Now, what did she write? Now I'm going into a fucking rabbit hole. Southland so she won for NYPD Blue. Southland was a good show, but it never really found its footing because it was on NBC and it was a little too gritty for NBC. Then it went to TNT or TBS, one of those. If that show was on a cable network, it would have been fine. And Regina King was doing some fucking great work on that show. Black actress, hashtag. Yeah, Ozymandias. God damn, I'm sorry for saying GD. That was such a great episode. Oh, and Rian Johnson directed it too. Rian Johnson, who did Looper and Brick, one of my favorite like low key, low budgety like indie movies, like one of those Fox Focus features. I may have said this hundreds of times, and I probably said this on a lot on JL Covan's podcast. Just a really good movie. The Brothers Bloom, also good. But wasn't given. I would just say it was really underrated. And I think Rian Johnson's doing one of the Star Wars. He's directing Star Wars Episode 8, and he is writing, or he wrote episode 9. So he's in the process of doing that. So they're filming episode 8. This motherfucker is a beast, and he's also from Baltimore. He's from Maryland. He's from somewhere in Maryland. But he went to, okay, anyway, so I went down a rabbit hole too much. But this show, Flesh and Bone, I like this show. It's got some creepy ass elements, but I'm always attracted to shows where art is involved, where especially the performing arts are involved. But so this girl's got to, she's trying to make her way into this ballet company. And it's just how, it shows you how brutal that art form is to women. And ballet movies, most of the ones I've seen have been pretty interesting, and they've always had the common theme of being really hardcore. I remember someone told me, this is the movie Center Stage, and one of the actors who's in Center Stage is in this show. A young Zoe Saldana was in Center Stage. Good movie. And somebody recommended it to me, and I was like, man, I don't want to see Center Stage ballet ass shit, nigga. I ain't gonna watch this shit. And I was blown away. I was like, oh my God, this is fucking great. And I enjoyed that. I want to see that again. I gotta see that one. And it's just good. Like I really dug that. I don't know if you could put Save the Last Dance as a ballet movie. I know she was, you know, Julia Stiles was trying to get into Juilliard. Do you want Juilliard? Yeah. It's just a common theme of like how brutal that art form is and how just evil these teachers can be. And they treat these prima ballerinas like washed up running backs. Like if you're old, they fucking toss you out like a running back. Like you're fucking... I see his name. I see his uniform. Oh my God. It's not Eddie George. He used to play for the Chiefs. It's not Barry Word. It's not really Okoye, but it's like, oh my God. Oh, I'm so angry at myself. But they treat like a Marion Barber. Like when you're done, they just throw you off the wayside or you're with another team. They do it to all the good running backs, like Emmitt Smith, all-time Russian leader. Like he ended his career with the Cardinals, and it's just fucking sad. And that's what they do to the, it's essential. These women, men and women, but mainly women, are athletes. And it's beautiful to watch. I've been to a ballet before. It's like the practice, the time that they put in, it's fucking amazing. So I enjoy that show, and it was fun. It was like it was 8 episodes. It's a mini series. I don't know if it's coming back or not, but there are some really tense moments where I was like, ah, and there was some that were like, ooh. And it's funny how like you have to be your lines, your body, the curvature of your body is very important. And the lead actress on the show's got huge tits, like they're amazing, like really great titties, and she's, you know, it. And they make fun of her for having big titties. And that's like would probably be one of the only industries where she would be made fun of. They said, your big chest is holding you back. Like they make fun of her. I'm like, that ain't no problem outside of this. Girl, that ain't no problem outside of this, ma. You good. You good. You straight, ma. Made me think of those movies like, this is really good Robert Altman movie called Company that was good. I like that with Nev Campbell. I remember enjoying that. So as far as ballet movies are concerned, Center Stage, Black Swan, The Company. There's one called, I think like Ballet 51 or something, and it's on Netflix. I got to watch it. That's a documentary though. And there's one about Misty Copeland that just came out recently that's on demand somewhere. I want to check that out too. But yeah, it just made me think, that show made me think about all the all those movies and stuff and how they treat those women, mainly women, because once they're done with you, they're just fucking done. What else, guys? I think there was something else that I wanted to talk about. Oh, I wanted to talk about revisionist history has come up a lot, And I'll talk about how, I guess, as it, how it pertains to R&B music. And, cause once you're older, you can always have, you have perspective on stuff when, you know, you were younger, obviously. Sorry for this chair squeaking. It's so old. I need to put some WD-40 on it. So A Tribe Called Quest was on, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. I'm watching. It's like, oh, they did Can I Kick It? And their first album was, the birthday of their first album was like 25 years old. And that made me feel really old. But I was talking to Chelsea and Sue yesterday while we were riding back from PA. Like, it was just kind of like, yeah, part of me is like, ah, I feel old. But then that kind of makes me feel good too. Like, you know, just like, I'm kind of old and shit, but, you know, I still feel okay about it. And I remember I was about 11 years old when I remember like check 91, maybe Check the Rhyme was out. I might have been 12. It's like 91, 92 ish, kind of like that era, Scenario and Check the Rhyme. Low End Theory was what came out around then, Midnight Marauder. So I was tweeting, I was thinking about it. I was like, yeah. Wow, The Tribe Called Quest on Fallon is great. And that was the first CD that I ever bought. Was I got a CD player for like Christmas or my birthday or something. And Midnight Marauders was the first CD that I bought. And then I bought Tevin Campbell's CD, I'm Ready. And Tevin Campbell was one of my favorite singers. And if you listen to me on that... On Don Will's podcast, Bad With Names, like I talked about that, and I probably talked about it on here before too, but that made me think, like, man, Tevin Campbell was great, and he had those songs that I was thinking, like, that I'm Ready album, like, he was kind of too young to be singing, like, Break It Down and all that shit, and, you know, I was kind of like, damn, dog, you're kind of going in on this. You're 12. But it made me think about that. Like those, like when, so maybe making me think about my first CDs were just kind of like, oh, I had that Tevin Campbell. That was one of my first. And we were just talking. I was just talking. A bunch of people were kind of joining in on kind of reminiscing about these, R&B singers and stuff. And then somebody was kind of like talking shit about Boyz II Men. And Boyz II Men, like, yeah, they were straight edge and they were just like, you know, Down on Bended Knee, 50 Candles, I'll Make Love to You. Those were sweet, gushy songs and all that shit. But like, yo, those were good songs. Like those dudes were good. It's not like you can't, like you couldn't. It's almost like it's either one or the other. Like you couldn't like Boyz II Men and Jodeci. Like Jodeci were obviously more like bad boys, and they wore their hats backwards, and they wore Timberland boots. I thought they were awesome. They were just as amazing. And Boyz II Men was great too. Like they had those cotton, like they were baseball jerseys, but they weren't baseball jerseys. Like they had those outfits, and I had a Mets. I thought that was fucking cool. They were great. That was a shit. That was like the one like cool hip urban-y outfit that I had as a kid. Like I had Jordans and I had a starter coat and I had like a couple starter jackets or whatever. Like I had some good shit, but I just remember that being one of the few things. And it was because of Boyz II Men. I wore my haircut. I had a Philly as a kid because of Boyz II Men. More and more closely like Another Bad Creation, because when Sky Zoo was on the show, he was talking about Chi Ali when he was breaking down Jansport Strings, which is a terrific song. He was saying that, yeah, there were these other guys that were dope, but Chi Ali was closer in age and he was doing shit that he thought at the time was cool. And Another Bad Creation, those dudes, I think, were my age or I might have been older than a couple of them. But at any rate, you know, those guys inspired me. And when the more that I think about it, like that 90s R&B music, those dudes were like superheroes to me. And I was thinking about that like recently when I, you know, saw Sky Zoo at the Blue Note Like, that was important to me because it was just like, rappers, musicians are those that, while I always liked, I never had any like disdain for comic book folks and comic book heroes and superheroes and all that shit. I had those toys, you know, but the music, those people that made that music, they were cool. Like, they were superheroes. And like, regardless, I remember singing Tevin Campbell's "I'm Ready" to this girl in the schoolyard that I thought she was cute, and she was like my girlfriend. We talked on the phone a few times or some shit, and then she ended up skating with some other guy at the skating rink when I didn't go or some shit, but who gives a fuck. But that was like one of like my first little girlfriends or something in junior high, and that gave me, I couldn't really say, hey, I like you, but I could sing that song to her. And that was like, you know, a brother could sing a little bit, you know what I'm saying? You know, so like that to me, like, you can't discount just because now you realize that some of that stuff was kind of cheesy, or I'll make love to you and all that, the down on bended knee, please don't go. But see, if it's sung to the right person, or if you have those emotions for the right person, then it is real. Like, it isn't corny when, or maybe sappy or whatever, but it ain't corny when it's the right woman. When you feel that way about the right, your right partner, who you're supposed to be with, you know, when it's like undeniable that you should be together. So I don't know. I just was thinking about that. Like, it's either on Twitter, sometimes it's either one thing or the other. There can never be a gray area for some things, you know, like you can't like Young Jeezy and Talib Kweli. Like, it's just like one or the other for some people, or like it's not, or because those, some people make headphone music, headphone masterpieces, but then you can't really dance to it at the club, or the girls don't dance to it. I don't know. That's just something that kind of like that was going on online, or hashtag on here, and all that jazz. What else did I want? I want to do, how are we doing on time? 57 minutes. All right. I'll give you a movie review. So I went to Redbox on Friday when I was getting like some breakfast stuff for work. I rented The Gallows, and I watched that Friday night. Ah, mediocre. Not that. Found footage movie about these kids that at this theater, the kids do a school play called The Gallows. One kid who's an understudy goes on stage and he dies by accident because it's a hanging scene, and he dies. And then these kids try to, like maybe 20 years later, another group at the high school does the same play. And then some bullshit happens and they pretty much all fucking die. I was a little disappointed. I wasn't like, oh my God, it's fucking, I was just kind of expecting it to be a little more fun than it was, but it's kind of forgettable. But it's like, I paid $2 to rent it. So I went to take that back, went to Redbox and I rented Inside Out. Holy shit. Now, I always say when the movie's popular, I'll just joke with people on Facebook. I was like, all right, I'm going to see what you nerds have been talking about for the past few months, and I'm going to see if it's worth it. I hope it doesn't make me cry. You know, just like, I hope it doesn't make me cry or nobody gets divorced. And this movie is one of the best movies I've seen this year. And it's a really short list. It was just fucking fantastic. And most of you probably know this, especially if you got kids or whatever, but I'll read you the blurb. Riley is a happy, hockey loving 11-year-old Midwestern girl, but her world turns upside down when she and her parents move to San Francisco. Riley's emotions, led by joy, try to guide her through this difficult, life-changing event. However, the stress of the move brings sadness, who's a personification of, there's a personification of joy, sadness, and anger, fear, and disgust. So those emotions are all personified. So, however, the stress of the movie brings sadness to the forefront. When joy and sadness are inadvertently swept into the far reaches of Riley's mind, the only emotions left in headquarters are anger, fear, and disgust. And that's when shit goes haywire. Like the way that they set this movie up is just, it's beautiful. It's all this stuff is going on. And you just know things are like, are too good to be true. And then the whole rug gets swept up from under you. And it's just like, it's fucking fantastic. People were asking me, when did I cry? Almost cried. But I just didn't. It's not that, and I'll tell you when I cry. If something makes me cry, I'll tell you. But it just didn't happen this time. I got emotional. My eyes welled up. This is another movie where if you have an estranged relationship with your parents, it'll make you call them. I would feel like, or it just makes you. Or if you were lucky and hashtag blessed enough to have good parents, it makes you think warmly about them. And it's a really sweet movie. It's done well. Amy Poehler's in it. Phyllis Smith from The Office. Bill Hader. It's just fucking good. It's really good. And I highly recommend that. So that's the end of the show. This week, there's going to be some comedy. I'm doing some comedy. I'm going to be at the Flagship Brewery at 9:30-ish in Staten Island. That was a fun time last year. When I did it, I'll be at a place called The Shannon in Hoboken. That's at 5. That's an early show. And I'll be hosting two shows at The Standing Room in Long Island City at 8 and 10 p.m. So come out to those shows, follow the show, write, do the reviews, all that good stuff. And I'll talk to you next time. All right. Peace.